So let's review. This daf begins with a discussion about a stolen sukkah. Tanaban, sukkah gezula v'amasachik b'rishus harab. Reli has a paisel, v'chamach shirin. A stolen sukkah, or a sukkah built in the public domain, which Rashi says is also considered stolen, since it was built on land belonging to the public, are pasul according to Reb Eliezer and kosher according to the Chacham. Reb Nachman clarifies. Machlekes b'shetekev eschaveri b'hoitziyah misukasli. This machlekes is only in a case where he forcibly removed another person from a sukkah and now wants to use it himself. Reb Eliezer holds the sukkah is pasul because eino d'miyotzi d'chavase b'sukasli shechaveri. A person cannot fulfill his obligation with someone else's sukkah. Regardless whether he holds karka nigzelis, land can be stolen, and this is a sukkah gzula, or if he holds karka en nigzelis, land cannot be stolen, and this is a sukkah shu'ula, in either case, the sukkah is not his. The chacham hold the sukkah is kosher, because adam yaitzi dechavasa b'sukasa shechaber, a person can fulfill his obligation with someone else's sukkah, and since they hold karka en nigzelis, this is a sukkah shu'ula. However, in the case where he stole wood and made a sukkah from it, everyone agrees that he only has to pay back the value of the wood, and the sukkah is his. Rashi gives two reasons. He acquires it based on physical change or name change. As the Gemara next teaches, if someone stole a crossbeam and built it into a structure, he doesn't have to demolish the building in order to return it. He only has to pay its value. This was enacted to make tshuva easier. This leniency was extended even to a sukkah in which removing the beam would be less costly. The Gemara adds that after sukkahs, when he dismantles the sukkah, the beam must be returned to the owner as is, unless it was cemented into the sukkah. The Gemara next begins discussing a dry luluf. The Mishnah said, v'hayavish pasul. The Gemara cites a braisa that this is actually a machlekes. Tana, yavish pasul, v'huda machshir. Rav explains that the machlekes is based on the following. The pasuk says, "Ulekachtem lechem b'yem rishon, pri etz hader, kapes tamarim, vanaf etz aves v'arve nachal." These phrases refer to the arbaminim, the four species known as esrig, lulav, hadas, and aravis. Be'esrig divrei hakol hader binim. All agree that the esrig must be hader, beautiful, since the word hader is written regarding the esrig, pri etz hader. The machlekes is regarding the lulav and the others. Rabbanan savri makshina lulav liesrig, ma esrig b'yahader, av lulav b'yahader. The Rabban hold Yavish Pasul because we make a hekesh, a comparison of the lulav to the esrig, and the lulav must usta be hader. The Behuda savr loy makshin in lulav esrig. Behuda holds that Yavish kasher because we do not make the hekesh, and the lulav need not be hader. The Gemara presents two rulings of a Behuda which seem to indicate that he does require the lulav to be hader, and answers there based on other reasons. Nifr du olav kasher. The Behuda aimer yagdena malala. If the leaves of the lulav are spread apart, the Tanakama holds it's kosher, and Rabbi Huda holds he must tie them together, otherwise it's pasul. The Gemara explains that Rabbi Huda's reasoning is not because of hadar, but because kapis tamarim, which literally means branches of the palm, can also be read as kafus, tied up. Tehishim hayu parid yichtefena. If it was spread apart, you should tie it up. Ein ognin esalul of ele b'minoi di Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda holds that we must bind the species together only with its own kind, such as piece of lulav, or hadasim, or aravis. The Gemara explains that Rabbi Huda's reasoning is not because of hadar, but because he holds lulav tzarech eged, the lulav mandel must be bound together, and if some other species was used to bind them, it would be adding a fifth species. As part of this discussion, the Gemara cited a braisa which teaches, k'shem she'in peichsin mehen, kach in receivin alein. Just like we may not use less than these four species, we may not add to them either. Although this seems obvious because adding to them would be a transgression of Baal Taisiv, we might have thought that since Rabbi Huda holds Lulav Tzarech Eged, if this additional species was not bound with the others, it wouldn't be a problem. The Braisa teaches us otherwise. The Braisa also teaches, Le'matze Estrig, lo yavi lo parz, v'le rimen v'le dov acher. If you don't have an Estrig, you cannot replace it with anything else. And that also seems obvious. The Gemara explains that we might have thought that it is okay to use something else, in order that the mitzvah of esrig not be forgotten. The Braisa teaches us otherwise because zimnin denafik churva minei da'asal mizrach. It can result in harm. People might think that this is acceptable even when you have an esrig. The Gemara now refutes Rav's opinion that Rabbi Huda requires at least the esrig to be hadar. From an explicit Braisa, Tashema, esrig ha'yashin pasul, Rabbi Huda machshir. Tanakhama says that an old esrog is pasul. Rabbi Yehuda says it's kasher. An old esrog is certainly dried out and not hadar. And Rabbi Yehuda still says it's valid. Tiyuvta Rava is indeed refuted, and Rabbi Yehuda does not require hadar at all, even with the esrog. Rabbi Yehuda interprets the word hadar as hadar bi'ilana mishana lashana. The esrog is a fruit that lives on its tree from year to year, as opposed to other fruits that fall off at the end of one season. The Gemara then presents three rulings of Rabbi Yehuda, which seem to indicate that he does require the esrog to be hadar, and answers that they're based on other reasons. Hayara kikarti, remeir makshav, Rabbi Yehuda paisel. Rabbi Yehuda disqualifies a very green esrog, not because of hadar, but mishum d'legama peri. If it's so green, it's not fully grown and is not considered a pre, a fruit. Shir esrog katan, remeir amikagis, Rabbi Yehuda amikabeya. The minimum size for an esrog to be kosher is a walnut, according to remeir, and an egg, according to Yehuda, not because of hadar, but mishum d'legama peri. If it's so small, it's not fully grown and not considered a peri. Uva gadol. Kedei sheyech eshnaim biyadei achas de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda seymer afila echad b'shtei yadav. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the maximum size of an esrog is to be able to hold two esrogim in one hand. Rabbi Yehuda holds it may be as large as to need two hands to hold it. Apparently, Rabbi Yehuda holds that an oversized esrog is not hadar. However, the Gemara gives a different reason. Lulav b'yamin for esrog b'smoil. The lulav bundle must be held in the right hand and the esrog in the left hand. Sometimes they may have been switched, and the repositioning, if the esrog is too large, it might be dropped and become pasul. The Gemara continues to explain our mission at the beginning of the parak. Shel asherah v'shel erah nidachas pasul. A lulav from an asherah tree or from a tree of an erah nidachas is pasul. The Gemara asks, v'amar rava lulav shel avodah zarah lo yitol v'mnotel kasher. Rava says that of course one should not use such a lulav, but if he did, he was yaitze. The Gemara answers, hacha b'asherah d'moysha skinah. The Mishnah is speaking of the time of Moshe, when the Torah says that all Asherah trees that were found in Eretz Yisrael when it was conquered are not only asur b'hana, but must be burned. Therefore, as Rashi explains, based on the principle of kol oimid lisarv kesarv dami, that which is meant to be burned is halachically considered as if it is burned, the measurement of this lulav is considered pulverized and no longer has the required shear, and therefore is possible. Rava, however, is speaking of later times, when Asherah is merely asur b'hana, but need not be burned, and as Rashi explains, based on mitzvahs lav lohanes nitnu, kalaymer ain kiyim mitzvahs hanas haguf el avodis eved l'rabbi. Fulfilling a mitzvah is not considered a hana, and is therefore yaitzah.